If you have your Bibles this morning, let me invite you to open to 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3. It was Ben Franklin who said, "Early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise." But that's not how Solomon became healthy, wealthy, and wise. This morning, as we continue our new study in the book of Kings, we want to do an overview of the reign of Solomon. Now, we're going to stay with Solomon, I think, for a week or two longer. But I want to do an overview this morning of his reign. He rose so high, but then fell so far. Now, there are all kinds of stories and folklore and even jokes about genies who would grant wishes if you rubbed their lamp or if they appeared to you, and they would give you three wishes or one wish. And we've all heard those stories, and we probably wondered ourselves, if I was given one wish, what would that wish be? Well, on one occasion in world history, a wish really was given to a human, not by some mythical genie, but by the God who could deliver anything that Solomon requested. And we find here in 1 Kings chapter 3, as Solomon goes north from Jerusalem up to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, that God appears to him and grants him anything his heart desires. Read with me, if you will, 1 Kings chapter 3, beginning down in verse 4. "The king went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place. And Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, 'Ask for whatever you want me to give you.' Solomon answered, 'You have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on the throne this very day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, but I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours?' The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, 'Since you have asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both riches and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in my ways and obey my statutes and commands, as David your father did, I will give you a long life.' Then Solomon awoke, and he realized it had been a dream." Solomon had scarcely returned home to Jerusalem when it became apparent that something marvelous had taken place. Solomon began to offer pronouncements that demonstrated clearly that he had a wisdom that was not of a human nature, a wisdom that could only come from God. The very next story here in context is the story of two prostitutes who were brought in before him. They had had babies, and one of the babies had been smothered as the mother rolled over on it, but that mother, who had killed her own child during the night, switched babies. And in the morning, the other mother woke up to find a dead child in her bed, but upon examining the child, the text says she realized it was not her child, but the other woman's child. And so the protest began. It came to the attention of King Solomon, and you remember the story. Solomon called for one of his men to take out a sword and to cut the baby in half and give one half to each mother. And the true mother was shown to be the one who said, no, let the baby live. You can have the baby. And Solomon says, now I know who the true mother is. And the verse there in verse 28 of chapter 3 says, when all Israel heard the verdict that the king had given, they held the king in awe, because they saw that he had wisdom from God to administer justice. We learn later that Solomon's wisdom was seen in his writings. He wrote over 3,000 Proverbs. We have the book of Proverbs in our Old Testament that contains many of those Proverbs that he wrote. We're told also that he wrote 1,005 songs. The Old Testament book of Psalms contains several of the ones authored by Solomon. He was also a botanist. He was also a biologist. In 1 Kings 4:33, it says he described plant life from the cedars of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He also taught about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom. Now, Solomon was the third king of Israel. Saul was the first, then David his father, and now Solomon. And God had recorded way back at the beginning, knowing that Israel would ask for a king and knowing that he would give a king to Israel, God had required from the very beginning the words that Moses recorded in Deuteronomy chapter 17 down in verse 18. When the king takes the throne of his kingdom, he is to write for himself on a scroll a copy of this law. It is to be with him, and he is to read it all the days of his life, so that he may learn to revere the Lord his God and follow carefully all the words of the law. Every king of Israel was required to do this. He had to make his own handwritten copy of the book of Deuteronomy. And he had to keep that handwritten scroll with him and refer to it regularly, read it at all times, so that he would follow faithfully the decrees of God. Solomon would have had his own personal hand-copied scroll of Deuteronomy. It's no wonder that he would later, in writing the Proverbs, explain in Proverbs 9:10, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." Solomon knew that understanding God is what allows a person to have a discerning mind. And as he began his reign, he was faithful to God. He must have referred regularly to that copy of Deuteronomy. He administered justice. He brought peace. He brought security to the land. He ruled wisely and ushered in a period of prosperity that Israel had never before known. But while he was taking care of a nation, he began to neglect his own relationship with God. In fact, not only did he neglect his relationship with God, he clearly violated a number of the commands that were recorded there in the book of Deuteronomy. It was right there in his own copy. In Deuteronomy 17:16, God clearly gave these instructions. The king must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself. Well, why was this? David, in one of his psalms, talked about how easy it is to put your trust in the strength of your horses rather than in the strength of God. And it's no doubt this reason that God says, don't trust in horses, trust in me. In spite of the clear word of God, Solomon began to acquire great numbers of horses. In 1 Kings 4, it says, Solomon had 4,000 stalls for his chariot horses and 12,000 horses. Again, in the Deuteronomy scroll that no doubt Solomon had right there at hand, it said that the king must not take many wives, or his heart will be led astray. God not only told him what not to do, but he told him why not to do it. And yet in 1 Kings 11, we're told that Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Mark Twain said that the strongest verse in the Bible against polygamy was the verse that says, "No man can have two masters." Solomon had all these wives in direct violation of the command of God. In that Deuteronomy scroll that Solomon had right there at hand, the king must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. Again, because you begin to trust in your riches when you have a large amount of them. Yet in 2 Chronicles 1, it says, Solomon made silver and gold as common in Jerusalem as stones. It took Solomon 7 years to build the temple and to overlay it with gold. But it took him 13 years, almost twice as long, to build his own grand palace, again filled with ivory and gold. What began as a glorious reign ended in tragedy. We're told in 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 4, as Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord. Just as God had said, don't take these wives or your heart will be led astray. That's exactly what happened to him. I just wonder if Solomon had requested something else. I don't know what you would request if you had that option given from God. I wonder if things would have been different if Solomon, rather than asking for wisdom as good as that was, if Solomon had said, Lord, give me a heart that is fully devoted to you. I talked with Vicki yesterday and I said, what would you ask for? And she said, I guess something to the effect that we would be together in heaven with our children, all of our family together. One of the attributes of wisdom is that it learns from the mistakes of others. And the things that are written for our learning, we're told. And so I want us to look at Solomon in an effort to gain wisdom for ourselves, and in one sense, to even gain a greater wisdom than Solomon demonstrated in his own life. And I want to begin with the truth that you may not be aware of. You have the same option as Solomon. You can ask for the same thing that he asked for and be just as certain as he was that God will grant your request. In James chapter 1, verse 5, we have the promise of God given through James. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. It's yours for the asking. You can make the same request that Solomon made and receive the same answer from God that Solomon received. For our young people, before they go out on dates, they can pray for wisdom, and God will give them wisdom. Before you begin your new business venture, you can ask God for wisdom and be certain that God will give you the wisdom you ask for. Before you begin your day, you can ask God for wisdom and the way all your relationships are carried out, and God will give you wisdom in all these areas. You can know with absolute certainty that God will answer such a prayer of faith. But there's more to it than that. Wisdom is not delivered like the morning paper on your doorstep. It is the result of a cooperative effort between a believer and his or her God. Solomon would write the words recorded in Proverbs chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. He had received wisdom, and he had learned how that wisdom came, and he had experienced wisdom from God. And so he wrote to teach others, to teach young people how to receive wisdom from God. He wrote there in Proverbs 2, "My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." God will give you wisdom. He's promised to do that. But it doesn't just arrive miraculously. Solomon used all these words, and he knew from his own experience that this is how wisdom is acquired. It happens when you turn your ear toward wisdom, when you listen. It happens when you apply your heart to understanding. And when you call out to God, and when you cry aloud to God, asking Him again and again to give you this wisdom. And then you look for it, Solomon says, like a man searches for silver, like a man searches for treasure. If you watch some of those treasure shows on television, you see these guys out on mountainsides digging and going through all kinds of difficulties before they find some treasured gemstone. That's how wisdom and knowledge is acquired of God. So ask for it with persistence. Search for it like you search for treasure. God honors that kind of active asking. Well, Solomon didn't practice what he preached. He tells us how to do it right there in Proverbs chapter 2. In his early days, he himself was involved in this kind of acquisition of wisdom. But you've got to pray for wisdom, and then you've got to get to work. You've got to dig into the Word. You've got to be fully devoted to the Lord. You've got to arm yourself with His Word. Wisdom is always seen in action. It's not just a merely academic exercise. Have you ever noticed in Paul's letters that he starts off with the academic exercise? He deals with the theology, and then he always moves into practice, into the practicality of working out that theology. Paul always begins with the doctrine, and then he moves into the deeds that follow the understanding. Wisdom is seen in the choices that we make over the long haul, in our homes and in the halls of our schools and in times of recreation and when we're alone. All these choices that are lived out from our beliefs and our connection with God. The best decision that any of you ever made was the day that you decided to give your life to Jesus Christ. And most of you remember with clarity the day you were baptized into Jesus Christ. But that was just the beginning. That was the wisest single choice you'll ever make, but that was just the beginning of a whole series of choices you've continued to make throughout your life. And each day, we must plead with God for wisdom as we make all kinds of fresh choices in our journey through life. Either wisdom or folly will lie at the end of such a long series of choices. I pray for wisdom as a father. But every day, I have the choice. Having asked God for such wisdom, I have the choice to treat my children with respect and understanding, or I can ignore them. I pray for wisdom from God that I will be the kind of husband that I need to be. And then each day, I choose how I treat my wife, whether I treat her with warmth and affection or whether I treat her with indifference. I pray for wisdom in the workplace. But each day, I make the choices as to whether I will deal honestly and with integrity in every situation or I can take shortcuts. Solomon had the wisdom He had access to the Word that he had hand-copied himself. But he still made poor choices. You know, I think it's true that it's not so much the knowing that we lack as it is the doing. The cumulative effect of poor choices always ends in tragedy. Read the story of Solomon and you'll see it. But the cumulative effect of good choices always ends in victory. We're told by the Apostle Paul in Colossians chapter 2, verse 2, that it is in Christ where all the hidden treasures of wisdom and knowledge reside. We know where to go. Most of you have started out already down that road. That's where the treasures are. That's where wisdom is. It's found in Jesus Christ. It's found in our connection with the Father. And God will give you wisdom just as surely as He gave it to Solomon. Just ask Him. But understand this. Wisdom from God is only possible when there is an ongoing commitment to God. We all need wisdom, and we all need encouragement, and we all need prayer. And this morning, as we close, if there happens to be anyone here who's never made that beginning, who's never chosen Jesus Christ, He's the source of all wisdom. And if you need to take that step of obedience, we would encourage you to do it this very morning. If you need the support of your brothers and sisters, if you need wisdom from God, ask of it. God will give it. Support will be given from this body of believers, this family. If you need any of these things, we would invite you to come down front and make your request known as we stand and as we sing.